The next item of agenda is discussion and consideration of a memo addressing meeting with RDG Ames's comprehensive plan consultants. And Jerry Moore and Deb Shildroth. Oh, Deb City. Sorry, I didn't know. I got Jerry on as committee, but I didn't know. If you both were going to talk or not.
Yes, planning staff and others were invited to meet with RDG, the consultants hired for the City of Ames to work on their comprehensive plan. Deb, Amelia, myself, Marvin Smith, the chair for the Planning and Zoning Commission, and three representatives from RDG were at the meeting. We only had an hour. It was very short, but time went very fast. Before the meeting, we did request, I think through Deb, input from the board if there were concerns or comments that you would like us to raise with RDG. Supervisor Merkin did provide some input, which Deb did share. The points, she had 3 points. One is whether or not the plan adequately addresses sensitive areas or other environmental issues, whether the plan adequately addresses transportation infrastructure, and then issues with regard to areas that are just outside the fringe with regard to residential development, whether that's adequately addressed. So we put together the fine points in the memo. We started off by providing some input on the plan when it was adopted, that in 2011, the three entities adopted a 28E agreement, which was a 5-year agreement that got automatically renewed for 5 years. And then so in 2021, the agreement or the plan is going to expire, or it's going to need to be renewed. Additional points that we covered are that the plan, from a staff's perspective, provides adequate direction on how we are to handle requests to amend the plan, whether it be a change to the map or the written document, how we deal with subdivisions, annexations requests. The policies are pretty clear about what we are to do. We also provided some feedback from some frustrations that were shared with our staff, from property owners, from developers, with regard to the process to amend the plan, to do development improvements in certain designated areas, that because they're working with three entities, it does take some time. It is a cumbersome process. We also talked about probably the most impactful change, which has been the East Industrial expansion, and what that will do to the area and to the economy once that gets going. We brought up the north review area that planning staff did, Story County planning staff, looking for areas of opportunity for future change, given support from property owners, given market conditions, given support from the two other entities. We also talked a great deal about transportation planning. There was a lot of focus primarily on the north end than any other area. Concerns about congestion, limited north-south access, the need for improvements with existing systems, the need to to take a look at whether or not additional transportation systems are needed on that north end. We also brought up the transportation impact analysis ordinance that the county passed, and we think that that's going to provide some relief in at least looking at projects that are proposed in the fringe to get an idea as to what the traffic projections would be, to get to how that'll impact existing systems and what improvements might be needed, and eventually who's going to pay for the cost if improvements are needed. Housing came up. The consultants wanted to know if we were aware of any current housing needs assessment. And other than the information that's in the Ames's comprehensive plan, which was adopted in the 90s, I think there was a renewal in 08 or 09, and then the information that's in the 2040 mobility plan, we weren't aware of any current, but Deb did bring up some information about the housing trust group that has been formed, and likely that's something that will come from that work or from that group. And then so the transportation discussion kind of led into trails, planning, comments. We talked about R38, the improvements that were made along Hyde, which led into a discussion for maybe a need for a trail system along 190th. But just generally that there's some work that needs to be done there with incorporating trails into the existing system. And so after the meeting, it led to internal discussions because of some of the points that were raised. We dug into our archive records and came across a memo from 2013 that really kind of hits on some of the things that were discussed at the meeting, some things that have been discussed and been brought up by Planning and Zoning Commission members, by the board. And so we thought it was relevant to put it in this memo. Some of those things are whether or not the urban residential areas match growth projections. The urban residential areas are generally close to the city's corporate limits, whether it be Gilbert or Ames. These are areas that are supposed to be prime for development. If we have a request for development, the idea is that they would be annexed and developed under city standards. Do we need to review growth priorities? Ames has documentation for growth areas in the north, northwest, and the southwest. There doesn't seem to have been too much activity in the southwest area, so maybe is it time to take a look at those. MPO planning, which is very timely because the MPO is looking at updating their long-range planning document. So with that work that will be done there, you know, could some of the key components be brought into Ames River Fringe, or can we at least reference some of the work that gets accomplished with that? Another item was the Highway 30 DOT closing of the highways and the at-grade driveways from I-35 to Nevada. So is it a time to take a look at the land use along those areas? There's some questions about the rural water systems and city policies, taking a look at that. And then lastly, is there a need to look at whether we permit certain residential development in natural areas? I think for the most part we've been, the policies state that they're not supposed to impact natural areas. The county's ordinances allow a limited amount of impact, up to 15% for a driveway, access, footprint of buildings, that kind of thing. So that's another thing that was in the 2013 memo. But after the meeting, the consultants did indicate that they welcome the Board of Supervisors to, you know, to meet if you're interested in meeting to talk about concerns or issues in the fringe. That is to be done through their Planning and Development Director, or they would accept a letter from the board. They're taking public input through March, through their comprehensive planning process. So I guess that's all that I have formally. From a planning staff perspective, we think the fringe agreement is solid. It's time, though, probably to look at some of these issues that have been raised by our Planning and Zoning Commission and by the board. But we think it's a very important document. I think it's very essential for planning. It's really what good planning is all about. And I think we should be encouraging our partners to, you know, start thinking about getting ready for the future and updating it.
Wow. You put a lot in an hour, and you did a great job, you guys, putting together that list. You know, and it sounds like you advocated very well for the plan. Very impressive. Thank you. So my question back to the board is, do we want to do anything to try to talk to the consultants ourselves, or do we want to wait until the council itself starts to look at what the consultants have put together and provide input? And that's just what I've gone down and talked to them a little bit about to Deb and Jerry as they got ready for this. Was, you know, where would the supervisors weigh in? But certainly I'm going to open it up to the board for any questions, any comments or anything.
So I'd be reluctant to have the Board of Supervisors as a body weigh in on the Ames comprehensive plan. That's Ames' deal.
Okay.
Now, I feel we need to be weighing in on whatever impact that comprehensive plan might have on the urban fringe plan, because I'm one of those that I believe we're in real danger of losing the urban fringe plan over time. One thing, you mentioned the 28E, Jerry. That 28E is pretty clear that any entity can get out of it at any time that they want. So it's not like we're safe till 2021. And I think we're in real danger in 2021, depending on where this comprehensive plan goes and how the relationship, particularly between Gilbert and Ames, continues. There were some hard feelings from a previous action between Gilbert and Ames. And as we see Ames continue to push to the north and Gilbert start to a little bit push to the south, right, we're going to see more of that friction. I believe we're better, all of us are better, for having the urban fringe plan, and I would hate to see it go away. But it's unrealistic for us to think that we get to use the urban fringe plan as any kind of hammer or in any way like that. And so I'd be really interested in each of us individually maybe talking to the consultants and sharing our ideas, but I would be hesitant, Loris, for us to weigh in as a body. I just think that's overstepping our bounds. We wouldn't want a city council to weigh in on one of our plans specifically, that we'd want them to weigh in as we've done here. I think we need to be really interested in the urban fringe plan and what impact this updated comprehensive plan is going to have on that.
Well, last year I spoke to three of the six Ames City Council members to remind them how important the plan was, but actually we were discussing housing itself. I mean, that was the main meeting. So I'm comfortable, with doing that individually, and then if we want to go talk to consultants individually, I'm looking for the best way for us to make an impact upon understanding how important we think the Ames Fringe Plan is to an orderly development and maintaining some principles. That's
yes,
my thought.
So would you be willing to and be able to set something up for us to have those individual sessions, maybe a day that all three of us were free? How would we go about that?
Well, I think we're supposed to work through their planning and development director.
Oh, through the cities, through mm-hmm. Kevin.
But we could do that if you want to meet individually.
Yeah, so I've already shared my thoughts mm-hmm. with the city individually, and I would encourage the two of you to do the same as you see fit. Loris, I think it would be appropriate for us to have a letter approved by the board underscoring a few of the points that Jerry and his staff make in here, but also really hitting hard on how important we think the urban fringe plan is and how we would like to see it continue.
I like that idea, Supervisor Merkin.
Sure.
Okay, so if staff and I could work on that, mm-hmm. the three of us, and I know I've got two good writers sitting there who have just expressed those points, and put it on the agenda for the 26th, is that comfortable for everyone? I know we've got a lot coming on the 26th agenda.
Would it be in the same location as an action item? Consideration.
Yes. Yeah. I would want the board to give final weigh in on maybe something they feel has been missed, and then we can get out. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Great. I'll touch base with you guys afterwards then. All right. Thank you very much. And any final thoughts before we move on this? No. All right. So now we're going to invite, once again, thank you, you two, man. You really did pack a lot in, so that's good. Leanne, coming on back up, and we're going to talk about the Home-Based Iowa program.
I think it's still morning. I provided the board with a chronology of events of sort on how the Home-Based Iowa program came to be in Story County. I'll just quickly highlight some of those and give you some updates I've received from the Ames Economic Development Commission, too, via Brenda Dreyer. Mm-hmm. In 2015, Story County did receive the designation of a Home-Based Iowa community. It is countywide, so all the communities within Story County fall within that designation as well. On behalf of all the communities in Story County, the county did adopt a resolution, which is a requirement of the Home-Based Iowa program, and did put signage as you come into different, along different transportation corridors into Story County. It says, welcome to, we're a Home-Based Iowa community. We also had, at that time, the Home-Based Iowa program from the state had a number of, a target number that we had to achieve for businesses to register as a Home-Based Iowa community. That has since been removed as a category, but we did meet that requirement. We also had to create an incentive package, which I'll get to shortly. And then Governor Branstad did visit Story County that year then to hand us the designation. The incentive package that was initially adopted by the board is called the Welcome Home to Story County Relocation Assistance Program. It was budgeted $10,000 annually. It had a number of eligibility criteria, which I did outline. I'll get to those when I talk about the program modifications shortly. In addition, we Story County contracted with AEDC for the workforce development contract, and part of that contract is to really to assist Story County with the Home-Based Iowa initiative, the marketing materials, maintenance of the database of inquiries, really to be that conduit of the state, then to Story County. In 2017, in the fall, Brenda Dreyer and I attended the Home-Based Iowa Summit. We learned a lot and came back really kind of re-energized. At that same time, SCALE, Story County Active Learning Experience, I got that correct, was just up and going, and they were asking for projects. So Story County was able to get SCALE program students to come in and look at the Home-Based Iowa incentive package we have and offer some suggestions. They did review the incentive packages of all the Home-Based Iowa communities throughout the state, presented the findings to the board in November of that year, and they did recommend, which the board did approve, then some modifications to the eligibility criteria. I'm going to go over these quickly. The criteria include right now, I'll tell you how they were modified as well, be relocated to Story County and establish Story County as a primary residence. This was modified. Real estate being purchased must be located within Story County. It used to exclude within the boundaries of the city of Ames. This next one was removed. Be employed in a full-time position within Story County, and the qualifying job must meet middle or higher skill job levels. Again, that one was removed. Be an employee of a Story County Home-Based Iowa business. That one was removed as well. This next one is modified. Apply to the Welcome Home to Story County Relocation Assistance Program. What was removed was within 24 hours of military discharge.
24 months.
I'm like, wow, yeah. And then lastly, this was removed as well. The real estate to be purchased is financed through Story County Bank. So in essence, what we have right now, the criteria is they have to be relocating to Story County established as a primary residence. The real estate being purchased must be located within Story County. And they must apply to the Welcome Home to Story County Relocation. They must just submit an application. I can't talk today. Since 2017, we've had, through the Ames Economic Development Commission and the state, 227 resumes matched to Story County and Story County businesses. We now have about 180 Home-Based Iowa employers, which is an amazing amount. The goal is to have 200 by the end of 2019. And since all these modifications were adopted, we've had a lot of interest in this program. Up until fall of 2017, we'd had no one apply. Fiscal year 18, we received three applications. One was not funded. It did not meet the qualifications. And a little under $5,000, $4,781.50. This current fiscal year, we've received six applications and funded five. Again, one individual requested payment in advance, which the program is a reimbursement program. And we are at $9,281.57. The amount budgeted is $10,000. I received another phone call yesterday And I did reply back, said I'm bringing it to the board today and I'll update you following that conversation. But what we've been seeing is some of the applicants are not necessarily coming in for those middle or higher wage incomes or job levels. And we've had some inquiries of individuals coming to Story County that just are not even working. We have some retirements. So it really has become a program strictly for relocation and has, in essence, lost the workforce development component. That truly is what this program was intended and set out to be from the state level on down to local jurisdictions that embrace the home-based Iowa concept and build incentive packages. That workforce development piece is starting to dissolve, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I did have an opportunity to talk to Aaron Rewerts and Brett McLean with Veterans Affairs. Sometimes they're the first contact into the program, or me to them. It is managed through the Board of Supervisors Office, the Welcome Home to Story County, Iowa program. It leaves us with some questions, especially one regarding the budget. At that $10,000 amount budgeted, and the board said that that was a budget amount. Do we basically quit accepting applications for the remainder of 2019, fiscal year 2019 through July 1st? I don't want to use the moratorium word because that's not appropriate, but delay till then, especially given the light that the workforce development component has weakened. And our modifications and related to that to eligibility criteria required. Do we need to go back and maybe add or modify the employment requirement, or modify some tie in the familial unit to a home-based Iowa business, now that we know we have nearly 200 businesses. I don't have a recommendation for what that would look like yet from the eligibility criteria. So with that, I'm recommending that we establish a working group that would include Aaron and Brett, myself, Deb Shildroth, and either Brenda Dreyer or Cindy Dighton, is that how you say it, from AEDC to review the criteria and bring back recommendations later this spring. So the first two questions, the two questions before the board is, what do we do? We're up at the upper limit of the budget. Is that $10,000 it, or is there any flexibility yet this fiscal year? And then along with that, the concerns of the eligibility criteria.
So I have a question to your question about the $10,000 you said was the budget limit. I remember us talking about if more money was needed.
Right. That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Okay, all right. That's what I was saying. I don't remember us saying $10,000.
No, just a budget amounts.
All right.
When we did it, it was intended, not that this board gets to decide what this board wants to decide, but it was intended at that time as simply a placeholder. And the reason that we relaxed our criteria is because we were getting no applications. And so it just made sense to relax our criteria. Anecdotally, if you can't tell me specifically, can you anecdotally tell me how many of the seven that we have that have actually participated are working in Story County and how many of them are not? Because it was intended as a workforce component. Would you say half? If you don't have the exact numbers, just gut feel?
Yeah, I'm thinking of the names right now.
Okay. So
five of the seven that we've funded, I know definitively three of those seven are involved with the home-based Iowa business.
Okay.
I think the other two, their spouses, someone in the family is involved in it.
Okay.
The ones that we did not fund were ones of great concern. They didn't even come before the board for funding, especially the one that won a reimbursement.
Yeah.
And I've received a number of inquiries. Well, now a week goes by and I don't have maybe two or three that it's viewed as just an outright grant program. And that is not the intention.
Right. May I ask you where those people are coming from? Because does it mean we need better education through the chamber, which I'm not accusing, I'm just saying, you know, are they coming to the chamber? Are they coming to the VA office? Or have they heard about it on the street?
I don't know that I can pinpoint where they're not coming from.
Okay.
And that's what's really pretty amazing about this program. So the touches that Story County have are definitely through the VA, but then all the resumes are matched through the chamber and the state. I send a welcome to Story mm-hmm. County letter with the information. None of our applications have come from that practice. So I don't know if that's mm-hmm. worth my time to do that. And the chamber and I are sending out the same to the same pool of applicants.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of our participants heard of the program directly through an employment offer from Story County. I know two are from their employer,
mm-hmm.
who's a home-based Iowa business. I know for sure one did come through Veterans Affairs. Both Brett and Aaron do an exceptional job. They now understand that there is a workforce development. It is intended as a workforce development mm-hmm. initiative rather than just a way to help veterans relocate to Iowa in Story County in specific.
And I assume the working group would be looking at that in that question in more depth. When do you think the group would be coming back to us?
Probably late spring.
Okay, and you have had one inquiry.
Received a phone call yesterday.
Okay. If so, 9,200 so far divided by 7 individuals is 1,300 average. Mm-hmm. If we up this to 12,000 for this fiscal year, that would give you a potential on that average of serving two more.
They can request up to 2,500. We had one applicant. Lisa's not here, but I think it was $181 is all they received. So that really brings
skewed it.
Yeah, it does. But most of them have been the 1,800 on up to 2,500.
So my question is the need for a work group, all right? Because we have now here 5 + 2 are 8 funded so far in 2 years. And we, sitting right here at the board table, already asked you to narrow down pretty much some of the key factors I think that the working group would start with. So I looked at how big the working group was compared to how few people we've got in the program. And so I would like to cut down the working group. If you'd like to go back and examine, or if this board feels it's not doing what it's intending to do. And I actually went in, this is a rough estimate myself, but if we form this working group, and I don't know what it's costing the chamber for the person, it's $173.50 per hour for our 4 staff people to meet. I took everybody's salary. I mean, it's a very rough number, but literally we'd be paying about $175 per hour with benefits factored in for 4 people to sit down and analyze 8 applications. And so I just am looking at this. Can we cut down this from a working group to more of just a discussion here? If we even have enough data to really know. The fact that someone comes to you and inquires or applies and they don't meet our criteria now is just, that happens. Thank you very much, but this is a workforce-based program. If that's right, if the board wants to stick with, that's what Home-Based Iowa is.
And,
all right.
And that's what, right now, we don't have a workforce criteria in there.
Okay. So one consideration would be to shut it down entirely or add back in the workforce one, which for me is, I mean, that's part of what the program's about, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how we get away with, after we made the changes we did, all right, how do we still justify it being a home-based Iowa program? Are you with me about that? So if that's a suggestion, let's look at that. You just did in your head that most of them are actually that we funded already have been workforce connection. So I'm a little leery to ask a whole lot of people to spend a whole lot of time on it.
Well, and that's because there are a number of touches on individuals that once I explain to them what the home-based IO program is about, they don't follow up, especially given it's a reimbursement basis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think that I should do that. I have not gone through my emails. I keep track of every time I get at least an email, and I email them back, or I get their contact, and I send them an email, how many times I've sent them the program guidelines, and this is, there's a link to application. If you think you meet the eligibility criteria, let me know, and we'll walk through the process. But there are a number of those that don't actually go through the process of applying.
Okay.
I'm not sure if the number of people on the work group bothers me, but what we might want to think about is what specific direction we might want to give the work group. And what I'm hearing is that the direction, maybe a direction could be, is it going to be a valid workforce program? Are there ways to change it to be a valid workforce program? And if not, then, you know, then I think it's obvious that we shouldn't be doing it.
And so Brett and Aaron are both included with, maybe this is what you're asking, the likelihood of them both attending a meeting may not be great.
Good point.
But
okay,
we want to, in talking to the both of them, they've both said, recommend both of our names so that they can keep a continuum going.
My only comment to this is, informally, Leanne and Brenda Dreyer and I have met the last couple of years just to review criteria based on the number of applications and the amount of funding that people have asked for. And so it's really become more of a routine type of process. We had one meeting in each year, and then we usually do the rest of it through email and then bring the recommendations forward. So it's really not an ongoing kind of thing. It's more just once a year, let's take a look at the criteria. Is it really meeting the need that the board has set forth? And I do think a VA representative would be valuable, since we are starting to see people come through that department and inquiring about the program.
Okay, thank you. That helps me shift my visualization. I see working group when I think, you know, several meetings and everything. So, okay, so it's really back to what Supervisor Merkin is saying in part, is what kind of direction do you want from us about this? I have a follow-up question to Leanne about when you say you get these inquiries. Roughly, since you can't go count right now, okay. Are we talking about we're getting 3 inquiries for every application or 5 inquiries? You know, how much of your time is spent just responding to people who never call back or follow up? Was there 2 questions?
You need to reverse that, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
For inquiries, how many inquiries does it take to get 1 application?
That's good. That's well spoken.
I should have looked. I generally get 2 to 3 a week, okay, believe it or not. Actually, I shouldn't say that's consistent, 2 to 3 a week. It's like an ebb and flow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's dependent on a meeting that's occurring or they're talking to one, the veterans are talking to one another, but...
But that's something you could look at and bring back.
I'm trying to... Yeah. I'd have to look at that.
How does the board feel about the fact that if it's not work related, either through the veteran or a veteran's spouse or partner, then it's really not home base Iowa as a bottom line criteria? I mean, because if I heard Leanne right, some people don't understand that it's workforce created. She's getting more inquiries.
I've had some people say, I don't even know what home base Iowa is. And right there, that's a red flag for me. If they're asking, inquiring about our Welcome Home to Story County, Iowa program, that's through the home-based Iowa incentive package that Story County has put together, and they've not taken that step to go and sign up with a resume on home-based Iowa and are actively seeking some form of employment, again, in the familial unit or whatever that might be, that, again, is a red flag.
Okay.
So two thoughts. One that I think we need to deal with. I heard Linda suggest a budgetary amount. I'm going to suggest that we should not have a cutoff. If we've got applicants that meet the criteria, then we ought to fund the program. Mm-hmm. It was our intent that it was going to fund between four and six a year. It looks kind of like that's what we're getting close to hitting now. I think so. That's one thing. Second thing is, I think it is absolutely time for us to go back in and look at the qualifications. It's absolutely intended. It's been intended. I think today it's intended to be a workforce component, and I think we've lost something by removing that it be an employee or a spouse of an employee of Story County. And so I'd like us to take a look at adding something like that back in. But in my mind, one is pretty immediate. It is, are we going to continue to fund the program? I would suggest that for the rest of this fiscal year, we fund it. If we get an application that meets the criteria, we fund it and figure it out. And then going forward, we take a look at what our criteria are, and I believe we need to get back to workforce. And then if we see a real drop in our number of applicants, then we go in and we adjust it again.
So what was the maximum amount?
$2,500.
Okay. With that maximum, I can go with Rick's suggestion about we fund the ones that are eligible this year because we've got 3 months left in the year. We're not going to. But then the work group, I think, should address how we would what kind of criteria to put back in regarding workforce. I think there are some things that were taken out. It sounds like it's good they were taken out, like a Story County Bank, some of those things. If we're looking at workforce, just bring us some language and bring us some thoughts on how you might be able to get people, into the program better, get people attracted to the program better. Mm-hmm. Is that realistic?
Yeah, and it'll be our opportunity to look back at maybe how some of the other jurisdictions have dealt with their incentive packages, too, since we looked at them two years ago.
Sure.
So I agree with Linda, but I would just say that I believe we're going to control the budgetary side of this by controlling the qualifications, the criteria necessary to go through it, right? Because if you want to make it all comers, we can sure do that through the qualifications, and if you want to really restrict it down so that it's very narrow, we can do that through the qualifications. I still believe if we get to where we're drawing a whole lot more than 10 a year through this program, then probably the qualifications are too loose. And if we're not getting anybody applying, then they're too strict. But I also would say this. I don't think that we need to draw a line and say the only value is when somebody applies, because I think the touches that we have on those individuals, both through the AEDC and with Leanne, I think that it has a positive impact on Story County, the fact that we're at least competing for these individuals and they're considering Story County. Because I'm going to say anecdotally, some of the ones that you've made contact with that have never applied, it doesn't mean they didn't come to Story County. It just means they never applied to go through this program, and so I think there's value there.
Okay. I have one thought here as the group starts discussing. Okay, and that is, do we only give to people who are buying property? And that I would like you to look at the criteria about maybe signing a year's lease or 2 years lease. I mean, there's an indication, I think employment's another good way to show it. But there are people who probably, some of that are just getting out, who are still in the building their family stages, who might move here for a job with a home-based employer, who choose not to or don't find them economically being able to buy a home, but certainly would go out and rent a $900 a month apartment, and have a lifestyle that is they live in Story County. This is their home. So that's just one thought. So now, if we've shared everybody's thoughts, so I think we'll need a motion for the funding part, and then just direction for the rest, since we're not really...
We can't do any motion. This is an update. No consideration.
Oh, shoot. Thank you for spotting that. Thank you.
I mean, I think we're fine. I mean, so budgetarily, as long as we're continuing to approve the claims, we're fine. We're not going to go over... Total total dollars, what we're going to spend in FY19. And so going over by a little bit, any one budget line item doesn't require any action from us. And I think we've got pretty clear direction if we're all on board with that today.
I see.
Yes.
Consensus, I hear it. All right, thank you. Thank you for catching the update so we can't make the motion, but continue to operate and take applications. We're open for business. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Time for public forum number two. Public. Hi, Paula. All right. Dustin's back there. All right. Seeing no one, we'll go to liaison assignments, committee meetings, updates, and announcements. Supervisor.
Pass.
Okay. Supervisor Merkin.
Thank you. Attended a very productive meeting here yesterday. Central Iowa Community Services administrative staff met with service providers to talk about the new core services that we'll need to be adding for mental health and developmental disabilities. And I was getting kind of concerned as I was seeing all these new core services come, you know, definitions come on, because it looked like we're going to be building a building or renting some space to do everything, and some of the core services didn't look that different. And then they added on, there's been a new one added on, which is the access centers, which are like the first stop for somebody in who gets into the mental health system, and they're supposed to provide certain services. Our staff were looking at this and saying, well, we have some of those services anyway. Do we really need an access center? And the direction that they're going into is looking at something called an access network. So I know they're doing this in Southwest Iowa, working on, they called it a virtual access center, but it's recognizing your resources you already have available, what gaps might you have to fill, and then how do you coordinate all of this together and make the decision where somebody should go without having to have this first place for them to go. It still would require some reliance on emergency departments, but they decided, well, we're going to need that anyway because we need a medical clearance if we're putting people, you know, putting people in a service to make sure they're not going into something with an unmet medical need and then have to move them back to a hospital, have to do this. In fact, one person had a story about a person went here, there, and a first good medical assessment would have taken care of it. So anyway, the group is going to continue to meet, realize that we probably do need a lead agency to provide what the access center would do, the decision making, and also just getting some of the planning done to get somebody into where they should be. So the group's meeting again here on April 1st, and I think there'll probably be more meetings, but I found it very heartening because it was finding a creative way to not spend more money on a new core service than we really should need to spend, and that leaves us more money actually for services. Don't have to duplicate staffing, don't have to duplicate sites. So it was a very good meeting, and so I want to thank Deb and Carla for their participation in it, and we had a lot of service providers here, and I think we're going to make some good progress there. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I traveled back and forth from Des Moines area a lot last week. I know not as much as Supervisor Sanders did. Okay. But so down at ISAC, just to follow up on what Supervisor Merkin said about, there was discussion on mental health. There were some presentations. The one that I left still befuddled was what's really going to happen with the children's mental health network. That's the best I can tell you, is it was difficult to follow. I was reassured that Carla Webb was in the audience to listen, along with several of the other directors from various counties in our region, and I know they'll get it sorted out, but I was confused. There were other couple of great presentations on issues running from prescription drugs and how counties can save money by looking at how we obtain our drugs and the contract we have. And I always find a basic discussion on tax incremental financing interesting. So I brought back some questions for various people, and I put those questions out. I attended the first working group of the new planning for the Central Iowa Transportation Planning Alliance, and there are people from several different counties of CERTPA, which is an offshoot group from what would be considered the Central Iowa Metropolitan Area group, and we're working on an update on the plan, and we'll be discussing over the next few months, coming back and bringing ideas to various staff members, maybe reaching out to some members of the community groups in the community. This particular update is going to be much broader than the plan they did 5 years ago, and it is due in September. Also, I think going to the Capitol, I went to the Capitol on Tuesday morning, Thursday morning, with the Ames contingent, and it was Ames Day at the Capitol, and discussion about House Bill 165, that is the one that would change how counties were able to set their levy, cap the levy, and also change what type of property would be included in the levy. There seemed to be a theme running through there. We were able to meet with the governor. The governor was looking at it, did not say one way or the other what she would do in the end, but she did state very strongly that she thought it was worth taking a look at what they came up with. There's been a change about just setting one particular cap and not using that $78 million big number for the income of people in a large statistical area, the Midwest, and making the formula easier to understand. We briefly got to meet with a couple of the Republican state senators and a couple of our Democratic state senators, including our Senator Herman Kornbach. And we discussed the same issue with them. It was a little bit different spin on it. And all of those meetings were very short because they were in and out of discussion on the floor and caucus. Once again, though, I felt that the Ames group did a great job of stating in a very short period of time what some key issues were for Ames and Story County. So with that, I'll kind of wrap it up and call for we have one more agenda item now. This is a new item on here, and this was came from a request and a discussion from Supervisor Bergen. And this would be an update on upcoming agenda items that we know will be coming our way that may require research and planning. So I'm going to let you start it, since you have the clearest vision of this, about what kind of information would you like to share with us today about maybe upcoming agenda items.
Well, the watershed work group is continuing to meet, and I think we decided April 19th was the time we were going to bring back several recommendations, and that could be some people that we think should be added, positions that should be added to the work group, maybe an update on where we are in terms of the implementation matrix, because we've been making a lot of progress on that, and just requesting that the work group be formally constituted.
Okay. And do you anticipate there's anything that the group could put out in advance prior to that April 19th meeting agenda coming out that might help us in having more time to research the issues?
To have recommendations, written recommendations to the supervisors?
Well, I think that's what your vision for this particular item is. As you indicated, you wanted to make sure that on some of these big issues, there's enough time.
Definitely do that.
Okay, got it. All right. And Supervisor Sanders, anything you know that may require some extra research?
Yeah, so April 9th, I think.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. Yeah, April 9th. A lot of research on preparing for our annual photo op with the Iowa Games. That's all I got.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's as good, because remember, I'm high maintenance when it comes to those posing shots. So I ask for a heads up on that. Okay. March 26th, we are going to be discussing tax incremental financing, and Leanne Harder will be bringing forward a possible plan. What do we want to do? We already had talked about economic development before, about what kind of projects we were interested in. Also, if anyone wants to bring anything forward about that Healthy Life Center as far as another proposal at a lower amount or something?
Well, my understanding is that we're excluded from that now, that the planning group met and Story County is no longer part of the Healthy Life Center. I mean, is there more for us to discuss? Or I know in informal conversations that I've had, I felt like that leadership was moving on without Story County involved.
Okay.
The steering committee had a meeting last Friday. I was not a part of that, but I can do research on that as far as where they are seeing the county at this point in time. Okay. I know things were left last week with whether or not the county would have a special election specifically mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. this. And I know the steering committee has another meeting scheduled for April 3rd, but I'll do some more research in terms of what kind of communication they're expecting back from us or what we can be expecting okay. back from them.
Because I've gotten mixed signals, but you know how it goes when people talk, say things. So just to say that the issue about a separate election or
sure.
that's for Supervisor Merkin to decide whether she wants to put on the agenda.
Well, and I would suggest that it's not. I would suggest it's up to the Healthy Life Center whether they want to request that we
okay.
consider
so,
something like that. Because if they don't want us to consider, we wouldn't just put that on a ballot
correct.
Issue
correct.
Without them requesting it. And I've not heard them request that yet. And so just as you're setting the 26th agenda, I'd just like us to be really cautious mm-hmm. with what we do in regards to the Healthy Life Center, unless it's coming from them.
Right, okay. And so, yeah, Supervisor Merkin.
I asked for the presentation on TIF, and the reason I asked for it, it seemed like at the last meeting, we weren't all on the same page and in terms of what was possible and available with TIF. And I just asked for general purposes that we have they have a presentation, and because we need to be on the same page as to what's available, what our potentials are, and not just for it came up during the Healthy Life Center, but
sure.
for other things that happen, we need to be on the same
and
page.
And I'm all in on the TIF conversation.
Right.
You know, it was frustrating to me a week ago that some of the wind towers that are still ramping up in valuation were not included in the numbers and some things like that. And so I think there's huge value in us getting very specific on what's there, what's available, and what kind of things we can do. And remember now, the policies and procedures that we have in place in Story County are completely changeable by this board if this board decides to change. I'm not saying that we would,
right.
but it is completely changeable, and there are different mechanisms that you could look at. But we better all be speaking from the same facts, and that's not where we were last week.
And that's where we hopefully will be after
right.
we have a presentation.
Sure. I just didn't want the Healthy Life Center combined with that.
Okay, so, all right. I, too, have requested, I think we did this separately, that Lisa Markley and Leanne Harder, and I believe then actually Leanne talked to Lucy since we don't know about if Lisa be going to, so I understand the auditor's office has now been asked related to TIF to give us exactly who's online, when do they expire as far as our ability to pull any money, more money off of them. What, yes, so mm-hmm. we're all on the same page. We want to see the same numbers. Okay, so that's correct. The TIF policy, I suppose that would also be the time to discuss it. I bring up the Healthy Life Center only from the standpoint that as we formally left it at the meeting from the 12th, it was that there might be a request for a separate bond presented, and as we left it from our end, that if there was something, a lower amount, put out by us, And that was what I said. So if you've talked to someone informally, and now Deb is going to get formal feedback from the steering committee, if they're no longer interested in entertaining any dollar amount from us through a TIF mechanism of some sort, and Supervisor Merkin's not interested in bringing forward, or like you say, that they consider us out, then that's a shorter meeting.
Yeah, so I just have a different understanding of where we left it. I think the only thing that formally happened with the Healthy Life Center is we declined funding at $3 million and $200,000 a year. That was the only thing that we formally did. Everything else, I believe, we talked about a lot of possibilities, but I think all of those possibilities would be triggered or not triggered by the Healthy Life Center planning group, rather than us triggering something like that on ourselves. Why would we have a conversation if they're not interested in us having a conversation? And the only way we're going to know is if they ask us to have the conversation.
Okay, so I hear where you're coming from. I hear the validity in that. Mm-hmm. Just how we left it at the table is I wanted clarity out there. I happened to have a conversation with someone who left this meeting last week under the understanding that it was still open. And I said to this person, I don't believe it is unless they want us to come with a.
I think they need to request of us. Yeah. If they want us to consider something different, they need to make that request of us.
All right. I'm fine with that.
I'm fine with that.
All
that's
right.
Where I was ending up anyway. That
okay.
Means we heard more from them because I had feedback of, oh, don't do it that way. And, it wasn't formally from the group, but two people who were involved in the group said they weren't interested in the county putting bond. Referendum.
Right.
So
right.
I've just decided there's reasons not to do that, and I would agree. If we hear something from the group that they would like us to consider another method, mm-hmm. we can look at that.
We're all on the same page. We just are approaching it from a different angle. For my edification, Deb, I'd still like to know that they are not anticipating us being anywhere, that they have decided to let stay there. Okay, just so that everybody knows the same thing from the same source. All right, super. Thank you very much. Okay.
Look,
yes,
you,
Deb.
I'm not like women voters. I'm
public speaking.
Okay.
Come up, Paula Toms.
Okay.
All right.
In the future, can we move the discussion of future agenda items above public comment number 2? Because then the public would have an opportunity to comment on items on future. Just in the
book. It sounds like a plan to me.
Okay. You know, I never beat around the bush. I was sorely disappointed mm-hmm. last week at the meeting. I think if you are interested and open to funding something, you need to make the overture to the committee. I think you got your up and comings from them.
Do you really?
Yep. I mean,
interesting.
I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody.
Okay.
I can tell you that.
All right.
This is my instinct that, like, you weren't interested.
I appreciate your
candor.
Or your perspective. I still can't find the money, though, Paula. But anyway,
well,
so.
You know, I work in economic development. I know how the money works. You have to ask the right question to get the right answer.
Sure. Thank you for your feedback. Okay, so now we are good for adjournment.
Move that we adjourn.
Second.
Aye. All in favor.